Mike Pino is here, editor of Our Wisconsin magazine. It comes out once every 2 months. It's a heavy magazine because you guys are using real high-gloss stock paper. The photography is crystal clear. The ink doesn't run off on your hands. And it's the most relaxing magazine. If you're stressed out and your anxiety is hitting, pick up a copy of Our Wisconsin and your stress and anxiety melts away. Is that your purpose, to make this magazine?
Good morning, yeah. Don. Always glad to be here. Back out of the hinterlands in good old Racine, WRJN. Yeah, you know, these magazines, we try to make Our Wisconsin a relaxing experience from the front cover on back. And the idea is to take people, a little bit out into the country, give them a sort of... good. Exhale moment. Now you're going to get a reading experience that is going to relax you, maybe make you giggle, laugh a little bit. Maybe you might find a little sentimental story, a little tear up in your eye, but it's all entertainment, and the idea is relaxing. So sure, there's a out there in the great Wisconsin country sort of feel we try to put in every issue.
Now, I thumbed through the magazine the last few days just, you know, because I didn't read it yet, but I wanted to get some of these articles to talk about. And what we were talking about off the air was one of the first articles, the Guernsey Gals. And you educated me on Guernsey Cows versus, don't tell me, I remember what it was. I can't remember. What was the other cow?
It's a German name. Yeah. There's a town in Wisconsin that starts with new, and the second
Holstein.
Holsteins.
So
black and white ones.
Yeah, you educated me what the difference is and why you don't see Guernseys around anymore. And the article is about bringing them back. Yeah.
So yeah, this is a story. Yes, out in the countryside for sure, in Columbus, Wisconsin. There's a couple of sisters, Jen and Julie Orchard, and they've got about an 800 acre farm that their family runs. They're fifth generation. They started in Eagle, Wisconsin, but are in Columbus now, and. What they've got is something that is sort of retro, I would say, in the dairy business. Now, I'm sure some dairy farmers are going to listen to me and may be able to pick some holes into what I'm saying, because I grew up in Green Bay, but I did have some farmers in the family. They're bringing back Guernsey cows. When I grew up, that was pretty much in the 60s. That was pretty much the standard breed you saw around northeastern Wisconsin anyway. And, of course, down the Milwaukee area, they've got Golden Guernsey dairy milk with its heritage there. Golden because the milk that they give is literally gold. That's the carotene in it. But also, it has that milk has high fat content. All right. Well, at one time, of course, fat got a bad name in dairy and in all things meat. People were avoiding it at all costs, and the market shifted over to butter, from butter to margarine, and more of a chemical creation. Over the years, they determined that indeed real butter is better for you than margarine. My old boss once told me, I can tell it's bad because if it's not good for you, because if you melt some and put it outside in the sun, the flies don't go to it. They go to the other stuff. So they know something we don't. Anyway, butter fat is not a bad thing. So these ladies have brought back Guernsey cows. The dairy market went... probably well over 95% or more of the dairy cows in Wisconsin are Holsteins. They give a lot of milk. They produce a lot of milk in comparison with these smaller Guernsey cows. So they're giving more bulk, and more bulk, you're going to make more money. But now farmers are being paid according to the content of the milk, not just sheer bulk. And butterfat is worth something. So it's now that milk is lesser. There's less volume, but they're paying a little bit of a premium price to have that butterfat to make good butter. So you're seeing these smaller brown Guernsey cows that they have their Holsteins, but they're seeing these Guernseys. They're bringing them back, and they've got a special line of butter, artisan butter that they make, and 80% of it is sold in November and December, right? But you can get it now, and they hand roll these rolls of butter in different flavors and ship them out all over the nation. They found an old market that I would say went away and now is being better appreciated. And the sort of comeback of these Guernseys is the nut of the story. There's one more related story, too, over in Monticello, which is by Mount Horeb. And these guys never went away from their cows. Brown Swiss at the Vagley Dairy, that dates well into the 1800s, just past the Civil War time, I think, many generations. They still maintain their Brown Swiss herd there. It's a very hilly area. You're kind of in the bluff country, and it's interesting to see these brown cows up grazing, not in a pasture fenced, but up on hills and ridges, and they brought them from Switzerland because they're adapted to be able to climb, and they're comfortable with it. Again, a smaller animal, a little different color, but there's different content in their milk. And it took a dairy science guy to explain some of this stuff to me, but it's very interesting the way the market moves.
How now, brown cow? Remember that?
There you are.
Typing class. How now, brown cow? We're talking to Mike Beno, editor of Our Wisconsin Magazine. We're also talking about the latest issue. We've got a whole bunch of stories to talk about in just a moment. Mike Beno from Our Wisconsin Magazine is joining me, as he does every other month. You have an issue that comes out every 2 months, and we've got the issue in front of us. Just came out. Let's talk about Easter. Easter's coming up in a few days, and the Easter bonnets. I mean, we even wrote a song about it, but I remember growing up, turning on TV and watching the Easter parade, which really wasn't a parade like you know it, down Madison Avenue and Park Avenue in New York City. And the parade was just people walking up and down the street, not on the street, but on the sidewalk, walking up and down just wearing their Easter clothes. And they used to, the cameras focused in on them. They don't do it anymore. It's kind of a lost thing. But my wife, when we first met, she used to go to church wearing a special Easter bonnet, Easter hat. And I see you got an issue here going back to many years ago when people wore their Easter hats.
Yeah, we've got a story here. You know, it's a number of stories. And you're right, Don. Easter used to be much more of a big deal generally than it is now. Easter's coming April 20th, of course. And, I recall on Good Friday, the businesses would shut down at noon and to allow people to go to church or some quiet contemplation. That was even in the 80s, and when I was working in the Chicago area, those businesses were shutting down at noon. It was Good Friday, Easter weekend, in recognition. So, yes, Easter was the culmination of 4 weeks of Lent and a long time of supposed to be fasting, and it's been a big fish fry. No, isn't fasting, but it was religious, contemplative, and Easter was the big glorious end to that 4 weeks. And here came Easter, and part of the celebration were the Easter bonnets, festive Easter bonnets. The milliners would be putting these things together in the stores for ladies would go in and order them. They would dress up the kids in special homemade matching Easter dresses with gloves and some stockings and, of course, their bonnet or hat. And Easter was always chilly in Wisconsin, so they had to have a special little coat over it that matched. Mom and Grandma spent a long time making those clothes. And for the little ones, and of course, then the ladies had to have their special outfits. So this was a time to get out there in the spring sun, go to church, and stand there in a very celebratory, festive way. And so we ask our readers to share their old pictures. You don't see that change so much anymore today. When I don't see it anymore. But it really was a big deal, and it's there's some nostalgia. It's sweet to kind of remember. So we asked the readers to share pictures and tell us about what it was like to get dressed up like that. And they share pictures by and large from their childhood. I'm seeing one here from several from the 50s, 60s here, 63, 57. People on this page have shared the photos of the dresses and the things that Grandma made for them, and they're modeling them before they go to church. It may seem quaint now, but those pastel colors and the bright, upbeat, positive happiness that went with it in spring really is something I think readers remember and they like to share. And that's another idea behind the magazine, Our Wisconsin. It's actually written by its readers. We go straight to the readers themselves, toss an idea to them, say, hey, what do you think about this? Show us your Easter bonnet, or show us a snowman you made with the kids. And they respond, and it gets them into the magazine. They have fun with it. It's their 10 minutes of fame. And we'll send them a pecan pie baked by our Amish diarist for sharing a little picture with us. And that's part of the neighborliness of the magazine.
And a lot of those children you see in those Easter bonnets are probably grandparents today. Because if they were taken in the 50s, they got to be in their mid-70s. They're probably grandparents today. So now here they are looking at themselves as children, and they have their own grandchildren today. Quick Easter story, and I've told this on the air before. Living next door to us growing up was a guy named Bill Richard. He was a chicken and egg man. He delivered chickens and eggs. And every Easter, the day before, he used to hard boil a couple hundred eggs. He used to have the family paint them, you know, dip them in some kind of color. And when we woke up on Easter morning, there were eggs all over the neighborhood. You could look down the street and see all these colored eggs all over the front lawn. He did like three or four per lawn. And we used to go out and get the hard boiled eggs. That was breakfast. And he did that for years. Now, that was back in the 60s, early 60s. Bill Richard is around today. He doesn't do it anymore, but he's 103 years old. he was our Easter bunny. He was the guy. He must have come out in the middle of the night because we used to wake up at 6 in the morning and see the eggs there. So he must have been there in the middle of the night, 3 in the morning, dropping eggs all off the neighborhood. Today, you get the police called on you with the Ring cameras and everything. But everybody in the neighborhood woke up to Easter eggs colored in the morning. Okay, now what we're going to do is
how many people did he make happy doing all that work? That's great.
And one year I was over there in the afternoon on a Saturday before, and I got to see the operation. They had these giant pots of eggs, hardboiled, and then they had all the colors, and they used to use different colors for the eggs, just dip the egg in. They didn't paint them. They just dipped them in a dye, and then you found them on your front lawn and peeled them in the morning, and that was breakfast. We're talking about Our Wisconsin Magazine with Mike Bino. Mike is going to pick some of his favorite articles from this issue coming up in just a moment. Mike Bino from Our Wisconsin Magazine joining us this hour, talking about the latest issue that just came out with the cardinal. That's not a cardinal. That is a yellow. What's that? An orange? That's a robin. Is that a robin?
No, you're getting close. You're getting close. Robin's a state bird. I got a lecture for not putting a robin on the cover. That is a Baltimore Oriole with a bright orange breast.
Ooh, those are fighting words. A Baltimore Oriole. All right.
That's a beautiful bird.
Next year, you'll put a brewer on the cover, some guy who makes beer. You'll get. Okay, so speaking of sports, I picked out some articles in the first half hour. I still have some more I want to pick out. But you wanted to talk about stroke of genius. This guy who built a golf course for himself, huh?
Yeah. For me, the most fun part of this job, I've been doing her 13 years since we launched the magazine off the kitchen table up here in the Northwoods, but the most fun part of this job is meeting characters. You invite people to send their stories in, and you run into some characters along the way, some fun-loving people who like to spin some yarns, and you got to put a little windage on what it is they're telling you, but that's part of the entertainment, isn't it? You know, so there's this gentleman, 90 years old, in Wanakee, which is near Madison, named Sil Molly. Okay, he calls himself an old farm boy at heart, but he's spent a career as a real estate developer, builder. He built some subdivisions in that around the Wanakee area, and long about 1968, he's this real estate broker purchased a 57-acre parcel in Wanakee from a farmer, and he built his custom homes there, and So then he put his put himself in that neighborhood too, and he had in front of his house what amounted to an empty cow pasture. He wasn't going to put any more homes there, and it wasn't really good for development. So he put in some grass, and he kind of leveled out and seeded it, and the grass came up, and he looked at it. He looked at it a little while longer, kind of admiring his grass, and he well, that's boring. Well, That kind of looks like a golf course. So he decides to go with it and build his own golf course. Now, it's kind of flat, but that's okay. You can't have everything. So he made a par 3 course. He put in a little short course. He added 9 greens, and he put in tee boxes and planned in a few sand traps, and he started putting trees in the ground. He said, maybe a few too many because they've kind of grown. He had a few more obstacles on the course than you normally see, but he got it kind of looking proper. And so he named it Harvest Hill Golf Course, open for business. Well, it's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you can go there, Don, and all of your listeners can go. Okay, you don't have to pay for any. You don't have to pay anything, but a $3 donation is encouraged because that goes to the Wisconsin Council of the Blind and Visually Impaired. So I had a family member with some of that those challenges, and so it's dear to his heart. So Sil has this golf course, so to speak, and schools come out and seniors come out and people learning the game come out. They don't get all too wound up if the people in front of them aren't playing fast enough. And if people behind them are playing a little too fast, everybody just slows down and gets along because it's about having fun. Now, along the way, along this course, well, you got to have a little fun. So he made a little wedding chapel. He said, what, marriage guaranteed only as long as the ceremony, Father Sil. He's got old farm equipment, implements that he found in fields or something. He's got repainted, and they're standing out there along this course. So you got to golf your way around that stuff. And he's got little placards with official history for some of these pieces of farm equipment. And one that hand-painted sign says, it's an antique tractor, and it says, this tractor, an F-20 Farmall, was built in 1747. With its high-tech qualities, the engine was put in the spacecraft and powered John Glenn and Neil Armstrong to the moon. After 7 more trips to Moon, Mars, Pluto, it was put back in the tractor frame and returned to the Molly Museum here. Engineers from John Deere, Case IH, Chrysler, Ford, and Chevy stop every so often to copy the high-tech properties of this tractor. You play through it. Sil says his head is 40 and his body is 90, and he loves coming out there and talking to people. And his daughter Lynette and son-in-law Larry are helping him out there and keeping the golf course going. He just likes to get out there and talk to people. It's kind of like a beautiful park. He's had many offers to buy the land, and he's not selling because he's having too dang much fun out there. And this is the kind of people in Wisconsin we try to show in this magazine. Go see Sil Molly and swing a club with him.
He's 90, you said, right?
Yes, he is. And I talked to him on the phone the other day. He said people are coming out and enjoying it, and he thanked us for this because he just likes talking to the people. Like I said, they're not there to make any money. They're there to have fun.
And it's in Wanakee. I guess you can find it. If you get the magazine, you'll find that exactly where it is. It's in Wanakee, and great pictures, even the wedding chapel, Bill. Great pictures in there. Let's talk now. This next in our Wisconsin magazine, the next story even has a quote from Dean Warmer from Animal House. Which, I mean, how did you get that in the story? It's about. I hate those guys.
I remember another one. Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Yeah, I know. That was good. Fat, drunk. Also,
the frat boys.
Yeah, we're going to put them on double secret probation. That's a classic movie. I love that. That's right. Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son. That was good. Okay, itching for some fishing. Now, the reason I'm not an outdoorsy person is because of this article. Mosquitoes and bugs. I just don't like them. And nobody likes them, but I can't tolerate them. And when you get done talking about, I'm going to tell you about a DEET story I have. DEET is the stuff that you use to get the bugs away from you. When I was, this is not the story, but when I was going up north, I forget where the place was, but they were selling DEET in the store, 100% DEET. And that stuff is dangerous, 100% DEET. But anyway, talk about this story, then I'll give you my DEET story.
Okay, DEET was used in Vietnam. In Vietnam, has got a lot of jungles, as you know. So, yeah, it's effective on keeping mosquitoes at bay. This is a story, a little an ode to hating mosquitoes by a trout fisherman named Tom Davis. Now, I mentioned that the readers themselves do provide most of the content in the magazine, story and photos in the magazine. We have a professional or two who appear, and Tom Davis is an essayist from Green Bay who does our outdoors type stuff. There's hunting, there's fishing, but there's ecology. There's neat stories about otters and how they play in the winter. Tom's done many, many stories about Wisconsin's outdoors, woods, and waters. This is really the only nod to hunting and fishing in the magazine because it's wide-ranging, it's general interest. So Tom has given us a story about his trying to go fishing, trout fishing, in central Wisconsin. He's north central Wisconsin. He's heading over toward Wittenberg, west of Shawano. And he's found a stream out there. These guys learn how to read the stream. They check the depth. They check the flow. They check how fast it is, where the possible trout places for trout to hide are. They put a lot of time and effort into it, and also tying their own flies. It's a very, very big subculture that's rapidly into the hobby. It takes time and planning. He's on his way to go fishing, and he's thinking, I forgot something. I got the vest. Yeah, I got the vest. I got the extra fly rod. Yeah, I got that. Okay, I got some tippets. I got these woolly boogers, and I got these pink ladies or whatever, these damselflies, whatever they're throwing out there to try to lure fish. Got it all, okay. Soon as he gets out of the car and starts pulling his waders out and rigging up at stream side, he remembers what he forgot. He hears in his ears a little, oh, no, I forgot the I'm here. The mini-mart's a half hour away. No, I'm going fishing. And he wished he didn't do that because further along in the story, he's talking about finding the honey hole, tying into a bunch of brook trout, and he's saying, I was catching trout, but I was too miserable to care. So he goes through, what you can use against mosquitoes. We found some old art from Muscall insect repellent, M-U-S-K-O-L. Now I know Off is made by Johnson and Racine, and I know Sam Johnson would probably, if he were around here, would have a problem with us showing Muscol in a Wisconsin story. So let's just say right away, Off is a wonderful product, and I've used it often. Okay, Muscol, the reason I put that in is every tackle box that I've ever run into from people of my father's generation, my grandfather's generation, I've inherited a few tackle boxes over the years, and without a doubt, there was in every one of them, there was a little clear glass bottle about 3 inches tall, 2.5 inches tall, with a little screw cap, and it was clear, and this was the Muscol insect repellent. I believe it comes from Canada, but somewhere, this company decided not to go after mom and dad and the picnickers, which might have been a bigger audience. They were going to fishermen. That's who they were marked. That's why Muscol showed up in every one of those old tackle boxes. Did it work well? I guess so, but so does Off. So anyway, mosquitoes loving people, they love some people better than others. Not all mosquitoes. I don't know. There's 50-odd species. I don't know how many there are close to that in Wisconsin. Not all of them need a blood meal. Not all of them bite humans so much. Some go toward other wildlife, other animals. I've heard that dark animals like deer tend to attract certain species because of the color. Some people just get swarmed and others don't. I've heard vitamin A is something you should take, but I've heard that's been debunked. So if you got a deep story, I think people need to know about it.
Yes.
Because I can guarantee you up here where we live near Presque Isle, Wisconsin, Manitowish Waters, where there's a lot of pockets of clay soil that hold water in the spring for a long time, yeah, there's a lot of mosquitoes we live with. They drive us inside the house.
I'll have my deed story in just a moment. We're talking to Mike Bino, editor of Our Wisconsin Magazine. We've got more to talk about in this issue in just a moment. Mike Bino, the editor of Our Wisconsin Magazine, with me. Every 2 months, we talk about their latest issue. We just talked about mosquitoes. Two quick mosquito stories. I heard, and I don't know if this is true or not, but when you hear a mosquito go around you, the noisy one, they don't bite. It's the ones that don't make the noise that bite. So if you hear the noise, don't worry. But when you hear silence, you have to start worrying. Okay, the deed, I don't know if that's true. The deed story, back in the 1950s, when drive-in movie theaters were really flourishing, their big problem was people had to roll down their windows to put the speaker in the car, but the mosquitoes came in too. So what they did was, every performance before, you know, dusk came, they used to fog the drive-in with DEET. They fog these giant fog clouds all through the drive-in with 100% DEET. They sprayed, and then you roll down your windows, and all that fog came in your car. Could you imagine how dangerous that was? They don't do it anymore. They had to stop doing it. They were ordered to stop doing it, to fog the drive-ins. But for years, they did this, and people would roll down their windows, and the fog would come in their cars, and they'd breathe it in. It would be on their food, their snack food. How dangerous was that? Anyway, that's...
Well, related to that, I don't want to eat up too much of our time, but we had a story from about the drive-in movies. This was near Poinette at the time, from somebody who ran a drive-in, and they put it basically... They put it on wetlands right down by the Wisconsin River, okay, in the woods, and you know what's going to happen in early summer. And on the screen, they'd have the cartoons and stuff, features before, and then they would say, go to the snack shop, the concession stand,
and get the coils.
Dancing hot dogs, and they're selling.
Yeah.
Also, a product called PIC, P-I-C,
right.
I think it's the chemical Picardin.
Yeah.
And it was a mosquito coil they sold in there that you lit up and fogged the inside of your car and breathed
that stuff
at the drive-in movie.
I have 2 hours of drive-in movie trailers at home on a VHS cassette, and PIC was on there. And they have a little cartoon mosquito dropping dead. What show?
Yeah.
Coil.
Okay. And you run to the concession stand, get your hot dogs, light up this coil, and then chew on hot dogs in the fog and the smoke.
What were we thinking?
Good night out.
What were we thinking? All right, we got about 3 minutes real quickly here. We're going to talk about the Master Lock story. I want you 3 minutes because I want to get that contest in, too.
Master Lock. Now, the shot heard round the world. If you remember to the 1960s, they advertised Master Lock. Master Lock of Milwaukee was the world's largest maker of padlocks. They had the market cornered worldwide on the based on the genius of a hardworking inventor. I'll mention him in a moment. But in the 60s, you'd be watching the football game, whatever, and on would come a picture of a padlock on a target and a guy in a shooting range with earmuffs and a high-powered rifle. Boom, he hits this lock dead center. Wood shatters all around it. You can see right where the bullet hit, and somebody comes with a key and opens it. All is well. Mighty Master Lock, strongest padlock ever built. Harry Soroff, an immigrant from Ukraine, born in 1887, hoboed around the U.S. His family came to Milwaukee. He traveled, rode the rails. He managed a pool hall in Indiana. He worked as an advance man for the circus, but he was a tinkerer. And he figured out a way to fix flats by plugging tires with rubber bands. You see that now in use. His idea he did not patent, and he lost it. So he patented everything he came up with. And he had about 80 by the time he was done. In those days, 1920s, a good padlock cost the equivalent of $100 or so today. Cheap padlocks were the rage. You just hit them with a hammer. They didn't work. So he decided in 1921, he figured out a way to build a tougher padlock. He was taking scrap steel from used for armaments during the World War One, and he found scrap. Take the plate, cut these plates, stack them, and compress them under tremendous pressure, and grind it off, and that was the body of his lock, nearly indestructible. And what set him going was New York in 1928 bought 147,000 padlocks because Prohibition was in swing. When they found where people were making that evil sauce, they would shut them down and lock the place up. Now, ironically, these locks were made at the Master Lock Factory, 32nd and Center in Milwaukee, is a former Pabst Brewery. Anyway, Harry was unassuming. He was humble, and he worked right on the floor with all the people, and they loved him. And in 1940, they gave him a plaque, and it said, "In sincere appreciation of this splendid building and the progressive spirit of Master Lock Company, which made it possible, we gratefully extend our hand clasp for continued progress and goodwill, the Master Lock Companies of 1940. Harry hung on till about 1970, and he died, but he made a business known worldwide right here in Wisconsin with his rags-to-riches story.
And we have about 1 minute left. Talk about the contest real quick.
Our treasure hunt. If you want to win $5,700 worth of two e-bikes and a carrier, e-bikes are all the rage because anybody who can ride a bike can ride them. If you're a little bit older and your knees don't work so well, or you maybe not so nimble, have quite the balance you once had, these things, e-bikes, take out the hills. They make it easy to ride a bike, and people love them. We've hidden a key to the e-bikes in a park somewhere in Wisconsin. And in each issue of the magazine here, we take out 10 counties to narrow the search, and we give more clues. So anybody's welcome to go to public parks in Wisconsin and look for this hidden key. And if you'd like to know more about it, pick up a copy of Our Wisconsin.
And also, if you want to subscribe, it's Our Wisconsin Magazine. .com. You can subscribe to the website, OurWisconsinMag.com.